Welcome back, man, to another great episode of Comedians in Bed, where comedians can be comedians. And I don't really know what that means, but it just sounds like something you should say on a podcast, man. I got another great guest here for you guys today. Man, he's very, very funny. He's very, very talented. And I'm not just saying that because, you know how, like, when you be at, like, open mics or you be in a show and they be like, man, this guy's my friend. You know, he's very talented. He's very funny. You guys are going to love him. But, you know, like, in your head, like, this dude do not know me at all. Like, he's lying to these people, and I don't know why these people in the audience are trusting him. But when I tell you this guy's funny, I mean it. Like, he's really funny. He's very hilarious, man. He got a lot of great things going for himself. We're going to pick his brain here today. The very funny, the very talented Eric Emerson, everybody. Please give it for Eric Emerson.
Ooh, thank you. Happy to be here. It's funny that you use that as an intro, because I have like a very distinct memory of being the host of a show. It was like a local, you know, it was like a Tuesday show. So it was like all local people or whatever and newbies. And I remember like, dude, everyone was bombing so bad. And between like the first couple comics, I was just in like the whatever the mode, like the go mode. And I'd just be like, all right, this next person coming to the stage, you're going to love them. They're so fun. And after like three times, the people just went out. And I remember going up in between like the third comic and the fourth comic and be like, guys, I'm going to stop lying to you. I don't know what's good. Like, you guys aren't going to trust me anymore if I keep telling you. So I'm just going to let you know right now. I don't know if this next person is going to be any good or not. We'll find out together.
Go ahead. My fault.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
As a young comic hearing that, I would be like, bro, we don't know each other. Why do they keep saying this? But then I just realized, oh, they're just like, just trying to move it along.
Yeah. If you become that. Like, I think there's like a, it almost goes in like a little arc where it's like, you don't necessarily do it, or you do it because you're just copying people when you start. Yeah. And then you're like, why am I doing this? I don't know. And it goes down again. And then you do it for long enough that you're like, I don't care. I just want to like, I'm just trying to make sure that everyone's smiling and you get all. And then eventually you stop caring about that and go off the other end. It's like a bell curve.
It's crazy, man. It's so crazy. My first question, though, is like, okay, so is SpongeBob your favorite cartoon? Or like you just like, oh, this looks good.
Dude, I mean, like SpongeBob is a fantastic cartoon.
I still watch it to this day. Like
it's worth the, especially those early seasons. They hold up. This was just because my actual background, like my desk faces a door and a wall. So it's like it's busy. Yeah. And so I was trying to find all the stock backgrounds they had were kind of like glitchy and busy and stuff. And so I clicked on like open, like, you know, just pictures I had saved somewhere on my desktop because it lets you add one. And this one popped up. And I was like, that's crisp. I like that.
Makes sense.
It's one of the best. Like, I mean, the whole generation like gets the references and you know what I mean? Like if you're like, I don't know, I've done it for like comedy clips or podcast clips or something. Like if you cut to like a SpongeBob reference, a whole generation of people gets it's like ubiquitous.
What's your favorite cartoon?
Ooh, favorite cartoon. Gotta be all right, tough. I would say if I could only pick one for the rest of my life, Futurama, probably. I think that one, like I've watched that a million times, kind of to the point where like I it's almost like a warm blanket. Like I can just fall asleep to it because I've watched it so many times that I don't feel like I would need to catch. But every time I've rewatched it, I feel like I've caught like another joke or a reference or something that I didn't catch the first time, which is always impressive. I like Futurama quite a bit.
I like Futurama when it first came out, but then I don't know. I just got tired of it. I think my favorite, like probably adult animation show would probably be like a toss up. King of the Hill is pretty good. And it keeps coming to my mind. Or like Bob's Burgers. Family Guy's still going, but I don't keep up with it anymore because Family Guy just was getting unpredictable. Like it'd be like season premiere, and then you wouldn't see a new episode for like 7 more weeks. And I wasn't about to keep tuning in.
Oh, yeah.
I can't keep up with it. But I'll probably say like King of the Hill, probably.
King of the Hill is classic, and I just started to watch it, but it's never hooked me. Like I'll watch a couple episodes and be like, this is good, I'm vibe, and then just for whatever reason it kind of fades out, and then I run out of stuff to watch, and I'm like, all right, I'll pick up where I left off on King of the Hill. But I remember King of the Hill was like one that was on TV when I got home from school, but I wasn't old enough to get it yet, so I would watch it and I'd be like, I know I'm supposed to, like, I'm not picking up on some level of irony here that I should be or whatever. And so I try and watch it, and then I would like be like, I gotta watch Teen Titans or whatever.
I think that's probably why I like it, because I did start to rewatch it, and I'm like, oh, this is better than what I like. That I stopped watching that too, but I'm like, this is better than what I thought. Like this, white woman got an Indian, like a Native American husband.
is he like the secret lover?
Texas, what is this about?
He's like the secret lover, right? It's that's funny.
Yeah. It's very crazy, man. But yeah, I've been watching like old stuff. But like my favorite, like probably like little kid cartoon. Definitely, man, you got your classics, so I'm not even gonna say the classics.
Yeah.
But Rocket Power is actually in Dexter's Lab. It's like
classic. I liked Rocket Power, but my problem was that the only character I could relate to was Squid, the dorky guy with glasses. And so I'd watch it. Both my brothers skateboarded and like good.
Okay.
They're like one of them's like semi pro, whatever, skateboarder. And so they would watch it and they'd be like, this is cool. And then I'd watch it and be like, I'm Squid. I'm on rollerblades with a camera.
Now, before we started, you said like you're going back home to North Carolina. You guys skateboard a lot in North Carolina. And what part of North Carolina are you from?
I'm from just outside of Raleigh, of North Carolina. My brother skated like all through childhood and then carried on into their like adult lives, which is weird to say. It's weird. I'm not used to thinking of my family as adults. but yeah, it was plentiful there. I mean, I guess I don't know where the scene is, because I never got into it super hard. But I mean, there was never like a time when they had trouble finding like skate friends or skate parks or whatever. But yeah, Center, and I can't recommend North Carolina enough for a visit. It's definitely my favorite state. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You got mountains on one side, beach on the other side, cities in the middle, and the whole state's like 8 hours across. So you can get like a ton of, it's the most versatile experiences. You know what I mean? I was happy to grow up there, cause I got beaches, I got mountains, I got a little bit of everything.
Yeah. I've never been to North Carolina. Yeah, that it's on my list of states that probably scares me. I'm not gonna lie. But like after being to Hampton, Virginia, I was like, I don't know, Virginia's
it sneaks in there. Virginia's like they're trying to play it off like they're part of the North now. No, no, you were the home of the Confederacy. You do not just get to sneak on up there because people forgot where the line was. Virginia's very sneaky that way.
I've only been to Virginia once, and I think it's because when I went, I was like, bro, this is a little scary. I don't know. It don't look scary, but it feels scary. Like,
what part of Virginia?
It was weird. I was a track coach, and it was AAU, okay. So we stayed in Hampton News, but we were the competition and everything was in Norfolk. That's not too far. And we visit Hampton a little bit. And then I think that's pretty much it. But like driving through there and seeing the small towns and the mountains and shit, I don't know. Like I'm not from the South, but like every time I go down South, and like for me, Cincinnati is like the entry of like down South. And like,
the crossroads between
two. Yeah. You can start to see the hills and the river and stuff. And every time I go, like, I don't know if it's just me, but like every time I go down South, I just be like, dang, man, like slaves have to go through that big ass mountain to get fucking free. I would have turned my ass around, dog. Like, there's no fucking way. Like, every time I don't know how it is down South, but like up north, like, we don't really talk about it, I guess. We get like the colorful version of what happened, but like y'all down there, and like for me it just feels different. Like I'll be like, oh.
Yeah, it's one of the things, like I don't think about it because I'm from there, and my girlfriend I met up north, and so she'll see like, you know, a classic, like a picture of like a classic South Carolina home with like the you know, big acreage, the trees with the moss and stuff, and I'm just like, I cannot wait to settle down somewhere like that. And she's like, is that where slave owners lived? And I'm like, I guess if you want to think about it that way.
I think we might be programmed that way, like, bro, like, because we hear about it, but we didn't see it. And we always saw it in movies and stuff. Then when we get there and be like, dang, it kind of do look like that, you know? So it'd be like, dang, yeah. Like, so it'd be like a culture shock. But like, yeah, America is like, I'll be like, people be talking about like going to different countries and stuff. Like, let's first explore America. Like, you know,
there's a lot of different cultures in America. Yeah. There's still some places I haven't been that I'd like. Like, I've never been Southwest, like Arizona, Utah, desert stuff.
Yeah. That's different too. I've been to the desert. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, we don't think about that stuff. Like if you live in like Montana or South Dakota, like you prepare for the snow or whatever, you live in the snow or like Alaska. But like when I went to I went to Coachella and I was in the desert and I was like, I would never think to walk around with a bandana on my face. Like this is
weird. Prepping for the sand or whatever.
Yeah.
It's
a whole
different. I got cousins and uncle in New Mexico and they were like, it's so dry there that you can like, I think they described one time, like it was raining and the rain wasn't reaching the ground. It was like evaporating before it hit the ground. So you weren't getting wet. It was like, you could see that it was falling, but it was something crazy like that. And you're like, I didn't even know that. That sounds like Mars. I have no idea that existed on Earth.
That's funny, man. How did you make your way from North Carolina to Chicago?
So that was for comedy specifically. North Carolina, especially Raleigh, where I'm from, has a great little scene, you know, maybe medium scene by today's standards. I don't know. It was good. The comics there were talented, but it was just small and you couldn't get up every single night without like committing to like an hour or 2 hour drive sometimes. And Chicago was just, it seemed less intimidating than New York, which is where I kind of want to end up one day. And it was more affordable. I didn't have like a job lined up. I had actually never been to Chicago when I moved here. It was my first, like the day I moved in was the first day I saw Chicago. And, but it was just like it was like a great middle ground comedy scene at the time. So that was my logic for moving here. I don't know if that's the best way to do it, but that's what I did.
What made you pick Chicago? Did you just look at a map and was like, all right, this where we gonna go? Or
I think it had a, I knew there was a bunch of North Carolina comics that all kind of trickled up around the same time. So I think we all, you know, it wasn't a collective decision, but I think like a couple of us talked about it, then a few more people talked about it, then a few more people talked about it. So there's part of it was like, I had roommates, I had allies, I had friends that were going to be up here. So that made it easier. And then it was just, it had like a good reputation for comedy without being as like terrifying or expensive as New York or LA, which seemed like I'd be like, you know, 2 years in and then you got to compete with like the best comics in the world, which if you can't tell by the way I keep looking away and stuttering, might be like a smart move. If I was going to like go back and give my 22-year-old self advice, it might just be to move straight to the most difficult place and not, but you know, hindsight's 2020. Chicago ended up being good for a number of years. And I do think that it's got a supportive, like strong scene that will make you get better than your home scene. If there's anybody listening who's like, I can't afford New York or LA, or I'm not ready for those places and I need to get good, I think Chicago is like one of the three other cities or something like that, that you can move to. That's going to like challenge you more than where you're from, but you can like afford it or hack it here. You know what I mean?
I look at comedy as like, I guess you could say four gateways, you know, how they say the West Coast, the East Coast, Midwest, the South. Like so the four tiers or whatever I say, you know, in comedy, you got your LA, you got your New York, you got your Chicago, and you got your Austin, or you could probably say Atlanta or whatever. So I kind of look at that way. Like, how is your transition coming from being a comic in North Carolina to now this major popular comedy city?
It was not a bad transition. I think like, especially when you're 21, 22, 23, whatever age I moved up here at, like it's like the same reason that like 21 and 22 year olds are like good recruits for the Army. It's like you can just you can handle adversity. Like you can be up till 2 a.m. and not and still wake up for your job the next day or whatever. You can like eat chicken wings for free, you know, comedy club tenders for like five. So it was like it was challenging, but it was fun. Yeah. One thing that I remember being like a big difference was that stage time is restricted when you get to a bigger scene because there's, you know, 50 people at a mic instead of 15. So everyone's getting 3 instead of 5, you know what I mean? And your guest spots at a club is going to be 5 instead of 10, you know, whatever it is. So I remember having to learn technical comedy skills that I didn't have in North Carolina. One thing I'm really grateful to North Carolina for is that I feel like it was a great, not on purpose. I never like sat down and tried to do it, but I think it made me get better at improv and crowd work stuff because you would get 10 minutes before you had 10 minutes. If you know what I mean, you get 15 before you had 15. So I had to learn to stretch, which was, I think, beneficial because people who learned in Chicago didn't have to learn to stretch as much because they'd get 3 minutes for their whole first 2 years or whatever. So they got the joke writing skill set before I did, but then they would have to like maybe learn what to do when you got to when you run out of jokes. And I kind of had the opposite thing, which I think ended up helping me out. It paid off by like year 3 in Chicago when I was getting like host spots and guest spots and whatever, starting to do on the road feature stuff, what all that kind of things. Then I had like a skill set that I kind of got to tap back into that I think set me apart. So it was fun. It was different, but it was good.
What skill sets did you learn that helped you to learn how to do the shorter sets when you moved to Chicago?
Bombing a lot early on. I think it was like after, you know, a month here or whatever, where it's just like, I'm not fitting enough into 3 minutes that you start to learn like, okay, I do not have time to figure out where the person in the front is from or if they're dead, you know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. To use a cliche example, it was never that, but you know what I mean? So, I think it was just, I mean, watching other people do it and then feeling the result of not getting X amount of laughs in X amount of time. I don't think there's a rule for it, but you just don't have lollygagging time.
Yeah.
In your early open mic.
So when you're, so probably just hitting like maybe one or two jokes, maybe one super long joke that's 2:30 or whatever. And then like, how are you going from 3 minutes to like guest spots, or just like people get to see you and be like, oh, you're funny. Yeah, got that spot for you.
Yeah. I think, I mean, it was, and I still think that's the best way to do it. I mean, there's like, obviously there's important skill sets to networking and asking and having a good clip and knowing how to, yeah, all that stuff. But I mean, I don't think I got a show probably for the first, like, you know, months or year that it was a long time and I didn't get regular stuff for two. It was very, it paced out, I think, as it kind of should, like it kind of felt like things came when they were supposed to come or whatever. But it was interesting because I moved up around the same time as a good buddy of mine. And we had two different pathways when we moved here. There was a comedy club that I liked that was, had an open mic every Thursday, but the sign up process was like brute. Like you had to show up at 5 so you could sign up at 6, and then you had to wait for 2 hours till the show started. Then you had to check in to let them know that you were still going to be on it. So it would basically take up your whole Thursday. But if you did it, you got on the show. And so I did that every Thursday, like I was beating my head against the wall. Like I would just waste my whole Thursday doing just that comedy club, because I liked the feeling of being in a club that had a title that was comedy based. You know what I mean? It just felt real. And my buddy was like, I am going to do 3 local open mics in the amount of time it takes you to do that one, because it's just more productive. I get to hit 3 spots. And the mics might be worse, but I'm getting more overall stage time. And we just kind of crisscrossed, where it was like his paid off in that he did like every local show in the city way before I did, and had like those connections. And then I got like regular work at that comedy club for years after that. So it was kind of just two different paths to the same. And then like from doing that comedy club, I met the local comics, and from doing that, the local shows, he met clubs or comics who were doing the clubs that introduced him. So it all worked out, but it's just a matter of how you're, you know, which march you're going to make.
So that's one of the ways, because one of the reasons I'm talking about this is like when, you know, you hear a comic from a smaller city go to a bigger scene to give them more insight. So like when you're doing this open mic, now they're seeing you on a constant basis. And is that how you got into the club? Of course, you know, introducing yourself, meeting people, this, that, and the third. But is that like one of the reasons how you got into that club?
Yeah, I think it was there. I was there consistently and long enough that they saw me get better. So they knew I was like, I think that's like one of the crazy things about comedy is like you can do it for like 5 years and then you'll be like, some people got better and some people are like insane people. And you can't always tell the difference at the start. You know what I mean? Some people are like, yeah, it's a very bizarre, because there's no barrier to entry. So like clubs or shows or to have no way of knowing for a while if you're like just a random insane person who signed up because they get a mic, or if you're like progressing. So I did it for long enough that they saw some improvement, I imagine. And then, you know, it was just started like, and I had bad luck where it was like, the general managers kept quitting. So I'd like work my way up a little bit and they'd be like, give you a guest spot. And they'd be like, man, that was great. I'm going to put your name in for it. And then they'd like, you know, because comedy club is not that different than for most employees is really like working in a restaurant. You know what I mean? It's the same amount of turnover. So people just kept getting fired or quitting or whatever. And it took like two or three different like general managers before I got like the owner's contact or whatever. And then from there, you're kind of like in the fold or whatever for as long as they keep you around.
So here I kind of strategize. I'm like, all right, I'll hit mics on this night, this one, because I know what I can get out of it.
Yeah.
Did you do the same, seeing that your all day Thursday was taken up by one mic? So did you like plan your whole week out? Like, okay, I'll hit this one, I'll hit this one. And like, how did you go about planning that?
I was big early on like just hitting up anybody that I met, figuring out where they're going to go. I was lucky in that, like, the friend group that I had originally was like very dedicated, very classic comics. So it was like, if you weren't hitting mics, you were going to get like made fun of for like not hacking it. So it's like, so I had a good, you know, like motivational thing. I think, again, like especially when you're young and you have all that like excess energy to burn, and then you have like people who are pushing you the right direction, I would kind of just follow the flow of like, if I know my buddy is going to this mic, it might not be my favorite mic, but I'm like, it's going to be like, I'm going to write with somebody or we'll be able to pitch jokes. It'll make it palatable and it motivates me to go there. But then after, I think it's just like a matter of being in your scene long enough to figure out what you need out of it. And so after, you know, some of my buddies have moved, quit, whatever, gotten better and left to go to New York or LA, all that stuff. So, but now I've been in Chicago for years. So it's like, I know the scene. I know what mics are going to be productive. I know what nights I can hit a bunch. They're close together. The time works out, that kind of stuff. To answer your question, sorry for rambling, but you start getting strategic about it after a little bit where it's like, trying to make smart moves, your energy, conserve your energy, use it wisely, be smart about it. But yeah.
One of the things I noticed about like comics from bigger scenes, you guys have like multiple shows like every night. Like, how are you guys getting around? Cause I'll look at like y'all's like, you know, like y'all's month, like say February, and then it'll be like four shows one night, and then the next night, five shows, and like Wednesday, three shows. And I'll be like, dog, how are y'all doing? How are y'all? Cause here we just have like, you only got a show on the weekend. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
where are you based out of? What's the city?
Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus. Okay. Ooh, yeah. I was down there for the Don't Tell, which was
okay.
I liked it. I don't know. I think maybe it's me. I've never been great at like the networking email aspect. So I have been, it's happened, but I don't have like a lot of nights in Chicago where it's double stacked. But there are people who hit that stride here who like get in at multiple clubs or just have that bone where, you know, you can like, they post their Instagram calendar and the font is like, you need a magnifying glass because they got to put like 30 dates on a calendar or whatever.
Yeah.
That's like a certain level of hustle out here. I think I felt closer to that before the pandemic. I think Chicago took a big hit during the pandemic, and I would probably, you know, not make any friends in Chicago by saying this. I don't think Chicago bounced back the way some places did after the pandemic. I went to Austin, and I know everyone's singing Austin praises, and who knows if it's going to be great forever or whatever, but I went down there for like a week and a half or whatever to do some shows, and they really had like the, like, if you were talking to somebody at a show, there's like 50% chance that they have like 1 to 3 other shows that night to get to, where they've just got like their little rocket ship taken off right now. Yeah. And Chicago just felt more like that pre-pandemic. It felt like it had more of that fun, we're all in it together scene, cohesion kind of energy that like Austin is like tapped into right now. And it comes and goes and stuff, but it's cool when it happens, but Chicago doesn't have quite that level of energy that I think it used to.
Yeah. I feel like our scene here, like we started to get more mics. We got a Don't Tell and a comedy club. So if people say it's growing, I think I could say, yeah, that's growth. But I look at more so like the growth of the comic. Like, how is the scene growing the comic? That's how determine the growth. Like, do you feel like right now where you guys are at, do you still feel like you're getting growth out of the scene?
I'm going to say not enough. I think Chicago's got room for improvement there. I would, I just took a trip to New York. I didn't do any spots, but I'm like, you know, starting to eye the move out there. And, I don't know. There's part of Chicago where it's like, I should say that there's part of any scene where it's like you get out what you put in. So if you love comedy and you're trying, then it's not like Chicago will make you not get better. Like, it's definitely got the fertile ground required to become a better comedian, in terms of there's never a night you couldn't do 1 to 3 mics if you wanted to. And there's shows every night of the week if you can either get booked or want to see shows or, you know, meet up with people or whatever. But I think it's Chicago's clicky might be the wrong word, but it's just everybody's kind of operating in their own little bubbles kind of. And I feel like it's stunted growth a little bit, because I feel like every venue and every local show and stuff has their people that they like. And it just doesn't feel as meritocratic maybe as it did when I'm, and maybe that's because when you are an open micer, everything feels like you earned it because you're new. And so it might just be somewhat coming from inside me that after you've like done it for a long, long time, not a long, long time, but you know, like long enough to get your patterns down or whatever, that it starts to feel, but there's definitely weeks in Chicago that just kind of feel like Groundhog's Day, where you're like, all right, I did all those same mics last week. I got booked on all the same shows that I get every month or two, and the growth didn't feel like it was, you know, I might have a new joke that works, or I might have like a new chunk where I'm like, ooh, this is my new 10. I'm happy with my new 10, but it's not quite the same. I think that energy to progress is connected, but not the same as like the energy to like motivate and grow, if that makes sense. There's a difference between like the progression, like I'm technically getting better because I'm practicing a skill, mm-hmm. and then the growth where you're like, whoa, unlocked a whole new voice. I got my, like, I leveled up. I got the Mario mushroom, the gold star, whatever it is. Yeah. Like that, I think, is like a sort of a lightning in a bottle thing that you can't really force. You got to like either be in the right place, right time, or have the right attitude in the right zone, whatever it is more wishy-washy.
Yeah. As you was talking, I've never thought of it like this before. Like I do agree, like some people, even here in this scene, like the constant theme is like we got to come together and work together, but we never do. And I'm now that you were talking, I kind of think about it, like, do you think maybe that's because after the pandemic it was like a big push for everybody to, like, if you weren't already, like, to do your own thing, not just in comedy, but in like the whole world, like in America, like work for yourself, work from home, that are like, do your own thing. So now it's kind of like, why come together when we were doing that, and then the whole world shifted, and now it's telling us to do our own thing. So it's like, I don't want to be with you. Do you think that might have something to do with it?
I think there's got to be there. I mean, there's got to be some connection, right? Like, I don't know exactly where to put my finger on it. I talk about it with my buddy, Steve, actually the co-host of the podcast, who's like, we talk about it a lot where it's like, dude, somebody's got to bring fun back. It just didn't feel like fun came back the same way, where it was just felt. And I, you know, and that's in life and in comedy. And part of that's, you know, I'm sure part of that's not totally pandemic related. I'm sure some of that's just everyone older and has jobs and whatever. You start to look at comedy differently as you get older. It doesn't mean you don't love it or whatever, but you just have a different perspective on it the longer you do it. But I mean, part of it, I think, is definitely that. I think, like, it was just a, it was a weird time, and without like overanalyzing it, just like, it was a divisive time, again, not just in comedy and stuff, but I think it was a weird time where people were like encouraged to be like very skeptical of others and on both directions, whatever, anyway. And it wasn't all pandemic, just politics in general and culture in general and stuff. And it's just tough to get that out of everybody's system. I mean, it's like getting a societal flu or whatever, where you like, it's going to take some time for everybody to like just put their guns down after that.
Yeah, I'm just now starting to get like comfortable being back around people, you know. And then, like, when you think about it, like, I was thinking about it and I was like, I should turn this into a joke, but then I was like, no, it's kind of outdated. It's just a thought, really. Like, we kind of like the people that are still alive after COVID, like, we're the ones that made it through like this horrific world event, and like, we're the ones that's left, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, what do we do now, you know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, like it really, that really like messed us up as like individuals and as people. Like, it really did.
I think, dude, there were times when I was like, because I also lived alone for all of it, pretty much. Like, I had roommates at my first place, and they both moved out when that started. They were like, went back home, and then both actually ended up, or one, anyway, people went to Austin, and some people went back home, and then to whatever it was. But I ended up living in that apartment alone. It was a basement for like a year or whatever. And then I got another place, one bedroom solo for 2 years. It wasn't until I moved in with my girlfriend that I like had a person in my apartment on a regular basis. And there were just days where I like distinctly remember feeling like a zoo animal, where it was like, I was just in this cage and I'd be like playing video games or doing my work from home job or whatever. And like, I'd stand up at like six, like when you're getting ready to go to mics and stuff, you just stand up and you'd like have this like instinct where you're like, I'm supposed to be somewhere else. Have you ever been at the zoo and you see like the lion get up and be like, ooh, I'm supposed to. And then it just like looks around and goes, oh fuck. No, never mind. I'm in the cage thing. It was like that for like months, where you just stand up. You're like, all right, time to, time to sit back down, put Call of Duty back on, zone out. And I just think that's like, it's bad for your attention span. It's bad for your creativity. I'm still working remote for like day job stuff, which is good for comedy sometimes because you can travel. So I see the plus side, but it also just means that like I'm inside listening to YouTube videos and clicking buttons all day, which I think just fries the creative stand-up part. You have to like put more effort in to inspire that than people used to have to, I think.
Yeah, I noticed that I would start going out the house. I wouldn't leave the house until about five or six some nights, and I'd be like, okay, this is, I don't know, this don't feel right. So I made myself like I would make myself take a walk around the block just to get the house, you know what I'm saying? Like stuff like that. And now I'm even more comfortable like staying out longer, I guess, like in general and stuff like that. Yeah, I never really thought about that. Like that, I think that had like more of an effect on us than what we probably know. But you did mention that you know you got your guys' podcast, and you were talking about that over there, Turn Up and Stone. How did you come up with this with this name? Is it Turn Up like a vegetable or something like that?
Yes, it's like a root vegetable, like a radish or a potato or whatever. Yeah. So the joke was, or the title is, the idea of the podcast is that it's like a funny advice podcast. So like people can submit their questions, and me and my co-host and then comic guests sometimes will try and like come up with funny answers or responses. And so when we were coming up with the idea for the podcast, I said, trying to get good advice from a comic is like trying to get blood from a stone. And my buddy said, he said juice from a turnip. Yeah. So it's two phrases that mean the same thing. Blood from a stone, juice from a turnip. So I was like, we'll call it turnip and stone. I thought that was catchy, right. Unique. We got a little logo.
Yeah. I was like, y'all better than me. I was like, I'm not getting no logo.
It's okay. We were a little preemptive with the logo. I got very excited very early. You're like, I got the guy up here. I'll plug him, Chris Grieco. He also runs the Roast Battle in Chicago. Good comic, good show, good artist. He did the art for the thing. Okay, so we got all excited. We're like, we're going to start the podcast, get it going. Yeah. I was like, I'll drop some coin, get a little art going. The Instagram. There's like 32 followers. You're like, I don't know if I needed to start with the art. I could have come to that later.
Humble you real quick. I wanted to do Neo, like a Neo light sign that says comedians in bed. But I was like, man, just pop up the laptop and let's just get it rolling.
That's the right attitude. You got to get. Yeah. And then once you get the Patreon money coming in or whatever, that's when you start getting the custom neon. You start doing the merch and stuff.
I'm trying to figure that part out, but it's like, man, you know, first you got to get the subscribers. You'd be like, okay, 56 people watch my story, but 56 people didn't listen. Like, you know,
no, dude, I completely feel that. It's one of those things where it's like, we do like a live show once a month, and the first time that we did it, we do it at this coffee shop that I like, mm-hmm. just because the venue's cool. Like, the guy that we work with, like one of the owners, just seems to like us and just vibe with the thing. He's just chill and easy to work with, which is rare, you know what I mean, in venue owners and supporters of comedy stuff. But it's just not a convenient, it's not near a train. It's not really close to the bus stop. It's like, you know, kind of residential, but not like people who'd go out and see a live comedy podcast. It's like near school. So it's, I like it. But like the first show had like a bunch of tickets because like all the locals of the coffee shop came out to support. And then the second show had like 6 people, and the third show had like 3. And then eventually we just started using the coffee shop as like a studio. We just couldn't get, like, once it got like summertime warm out, nobody was like, everyone's out partying and stuff like that. So it's it's tough. It's tough to figure that stuff out.
I like it though, because like when it do grow, then you can be like, man, I remember the days when I was begging people. You know what I'm saying? I think early on in my comedic journey, I used to get so frustrated because I'm like, this isn't happening. And it just, nobody explained it to me, and I didn't have the courage to ask.
Yeah.
And now that I've gotten older in my comedic career, now it's like, oh, I'm like in no rush to like make this thing, like, you know, I don't want it to take too long, but I'm actually not in as much as a rush. Like, I really care about it to like, okay, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that, we're gonna do this. And like, even with this, like, I didn't just like think about it, just go with it. I thought about it for a couple, like, I just had a picture and I was like, this looks cool, and I had a name. I don't know if God gave me the name or if I was like so freaking high, but I was just like, you know, comedians in bed, I was like, it's just a place where, you know, comedians could just be themselves. Like, you know, like, because, you know, we go places and people be like, oh, you feel like you got to be funny, and I don't know, I don't, if I don't want to talk or if I don't feel like making jokes, I'm not gonna do it, you know what I'm saying? So like, I just wanted a place where like comedians could just like come and just be themselves, you know, like, if you look at a bedroom, like, that's your most, like, it, well, to me it should be your most peaceful like environment, you know. That's where you might have pillow talk with your girl, or you may just like think about, oh shit, how I'm gonna pay these bills. Like, that's where you're like thinking, like, your most vulnerable self, probably in your bedroom. And that's kind of like, I just wanted a platform for comedians to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. And I think the no rush philosophy is like, some version of that is important, because I think, and you know, when I talk about it with my buddies, I just call it like the comedy gods. I don't know, you know, like, everyone's, you can call it karma, you can call it God, you can call it spirit, whatever you want. But like, I think from what I've noticed from watching other people try other projects and from me trying projects, like, something out there knows if you're doing it for the wrong reason. Like, if you're putting out stand-up clips because you want to like cut the line and start making money and get famous before you're ready. It's not like it's not going to work, or it's going to work and you're going to wish it didn't, because you'll blow up and not be able to back it up, or you know what I mean? Or your fans will like you for the wrong reasons, or it won't blow up. I know I tried like just seeing if I could master the social media game, even though I didn't enjoy it. And it was like the first clips that I put out when I wasn't thinking about it did good, because of course I don't care if they blow up or not. I'm just proud of the material and the clips and stuff. And then when I started doing it, like, all right, I'm going to make sure that I do one every Tuesday for the rest of the meh. And I'm going to do this, and I'm going to use these colors, cause it'll meh. And the algorithm, as soon as you try and do that, something out there knows that you're trying to hack the system and you're going to get swatted down. And like same for podcasts, same for like, I've tried to figure out a good podcast that would be like smart before. I've tried it out with different people, different times in my thing or whatever. And then eventually I was like, look, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it with like just a buddy who's fun to talk to, because it's fun to talk to this guy. I'm not going to try and engineer something that's like, I'm pulling the strings trying to make the thing work or whatever. And, you know, I'm trying to do that with other stuff where I'm like, I think it's not bad to have other projects. It's not bad to put out your clips or your sets or whatever. It's just like important to make sure that you're tapped into why you're doing what you're doing and, you know, for who and when and stuff. Because if you do it for the wrong reasons, you're going to end up disliking it, and it's going to make you a worse comic or a worse person. You know what I mean? I think it's something ties it all together, and it's very hard to tell, but you see it happen out there in the world. You're like, that's exactly how it's going to happen.
So I should be a father, because I want to be a father, not a father for the tax refund check.
Basically, essentially the same thing.
Because they're so big. I don't think people understand, like, when you're single, you don't have kids, your tax refund check is barely over $1,000. And it's like, but these people with kids, they don't need all this money. They're just going to squander it.
No. They have the love of a child. They don't need money. They're happier than we could ever imagine.
I'll be mad, like, man, you get a big check, but then I'll be happy because I don't got the kid. But like,
yeah, you got a little bit. See, everything's a little yin and yang. You gotta pay. Everything's gonna cost you somewhere. Everything's gonna pay out somewhere.
Man, now that you're like in Chicago and you know you're teetering with the idea of going to New York, do you feel like validated that, you know, coming from North Carolina and you, I don't know if you feel this way, but like conquered like this scene, like, do you, like, how does that make you feel? Like, I came here on a whimsical, but now I'm like, people are talking about me.
I go back and forth on it a little bit, because I get like, it's easy to get down, like you were saying earlier, like it's easier to be like, I didn't get this. I think like a big lie of Chicago is like that you can either make it from here or that you can get something here that's going to change your career. I think I moved here with that goal in mind. And I think that's something that Chicago is like still lying to itself about, where it's like, it's Chicago would be, I think it would be such a better scene for comedy if everyone would accept that this is the best place to practice and not the worst place to make it, if that makes sense. Like, it's the best B scene of comedy in a lot of ways. You know, Austin is having its moment, and like other cities have had good moments in the past, but like Chicago's like, it's got history, it's got scene, it's got infrastructure. It's never going to be New York or LA. And if everyone here could like let that ego drop a little bit and just, you know, going back to have the fun, get the reps in, get good, you could make it like a minor league baseball team, where like you could get really good here, move to New York, get good, come back, take your buddy from Chicago on the road, give him a boost. He gets a credit. Then he can move to New York, then he can take his buddy. You could like really get the gears rolling here if you wanted to. But I would say, so there's times where I get down where I'm like, never got JFL. Who knows? I mean, it could still potentially happen, you know, knock on wood or whatever, but like, comics who come through and do the clubs here generally aren't looking for a feature to bring on the road. That's another thing where you're like, oh, maybe I'll, you know, I've gotten to, you know, like host and feature level at like Zany's, not to name drop, whatever. But anyway, like where, you know, I've done good, comics say nice things, but it's like if they're not bringing a feature to the Midwest, it's because they can't afford it. And if they can't afford it, they already have their feature who's coming through. So yeah. People have done it. I have buddies who like have become like the go-to Midwest feature for so-and-so. And I, you know, there are people here who have gotten JFL, and then gone to other cities and done well. Writing for the Onion is something people can do here that like is a, I guess you call it a credit, whatever. But, anyway, letting go of all that, when I stop looking at like, what haven't I done or what did I expect that I shouldn't have expected and start looking at it, like, you know, I moved here with like not a lot of money and were, you know, like, and just made it. Like I had never lived outside of like college dorm, you know, whatever. I had never lived alone. And even then it's not like I was providing for myself, you know, you get a college meal ticket and shit. So yeah. When I look at it, like, I've been here for 6 years now. I didn't have to move back home. I never bottomed out. I never quit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm a better comic now than I was when I moved here by a lot. And the comics that I respect generally have nice things to say about me and think that I'm funny. And you're like, okay, like measuring by those metrics, which are the metrics that the comedy gods will, you know, weigh on the scales, is like, are you funnier than you were last year? Do the people that you think are funny think you're funny? That kind of stuff. That's the kind of thing where I'm like, all right, let go of all the other things and focus on why you got into comedy in the first place. That maybe reaching that realization is that's the real reason to move to New York. Maybe it's the friends you make along the way.
I'll be thinking about that. Like, you live there, but for me, like, I'd be like, dang, Chicago is a big scene. But I do get what you're saying and what you mean. I think, even like if I'm like, say you in a small scene and like a big headliner company, be like, come here, I want to mentor you. Like it's the one in a million, but you know, you'd be like, oh, okay. Then that happens for you. I just think like you gotta, what I'm learning for me is like, you gotta just like be a student of the craft, hustle at it, and then work your tail off and yeah. Just be a good person. And then whatever is meant for you, it will happen. Everybody's journey is so different. And that's the fun part about it. Cause now you can be in the green room at Madison Square Garden and be like, well, how did you get here? And then we can share stories about how do we got here? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, dang, you went through that. And be like, dang, you went through that. So that's kind of how I see it. Like you in my head, I'll be like, oh, like, you know, it was supposed to go this way or whatever. But now it's just like, that's why I meant like about the journey. Like I'm just like enjoying the journey. Cause like 20 years, 30 years from now, I could be like, man, I remember this happened, da da da, and DDD. And then like, that's something that, you know, you could kick back and laugh about when you're older and, you know,
yeah,
like to kick the hair, whatever. So that's kind of how I see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And remembering to have fun. My last guest, he said, I forget what the fuck he said. It was something about like, he says, fuck, it was good too. It was something about something, fun is in one of these words, and he was like, so remember to have fun. I forget what it was, but yeah, it was a great quote. So I've just always just try to remember to have fun. And then yeah. I just like, as I've gotten older, like if there's a comic that's not about that vibe, like let's have fun, let me help you, then I don't want to be around you.
Like, yeah, kind of thing. Like, it's like, and people don't, you know, outside non-comics don't necessarily know it, but like and not all comics know it, but like it's a long and it's tough path, like to do it. Not, you know, I'm not to be overly romantic about it, but like most comics have to work another job for most of their entry level years. And like most of it is not crushing most of it. You know, most of my first year in Chicago is commuting, let alone doing good. You know what I mean? Like learning and bombing and learning how to bomb, to be all the nightmare stuff that you got to do to get good. And so when you see somebody who's not in it for fun or who has lost that or whatever, and it comes and goes for everybody. I know, like I've had months where I'm just like, I'm not really in it, but I'm, you know, once you've done it long enough, you know that that kind of thing ebbs and flows and it comes back and you just got to be open, whatever. But you'll meet people who are like just not in it for fun, or, you know, like the capital F fun, like really enjoying it. And that's always super confusing to me, because it's like, this is so difficult and it's like a big financial loss for a lot of years. Yeah. And it's tough and people judge you and yada. If you're not in it for like with a real passion for it, I've never understood the people who like kind of spitefully stick around for like years doing it and not enjoying it or having nothing but negative things to say about their experience. That's always, that's confusing.
I've noticed that, maybe it's just my scene, but I think the first time I heard this analogy was in college. Like, you get to, I think when people start, and not just with comedy, it could be like whatever their dream is, like you get a chance to reinvent yourself. And yeah. So like, if you weren't popular in high school, oh, now I'm a comedian, now I can be popular. And I feel like that's what some people be trying to do. Like, they really don't. They'd be like, oh, this is what it takes? Okay, I don't want to do all that, but I'll do this just so I can be popular enough at this area, this level and stuff like that. And I see it and I'd be like, okay, you need to talk to a therapist.
Like, yeah. You know, my friend came up with it's like my favorite metaphor for that, which is like, he calls it like somebody's bit, like in Walking Dead when somebody gets bit and they hide it. Like sometimes you can know somebody for like a month or two, you know, you meet somebody in the scene or whatever, and then you're in a green room with them or at a mic and they just say one of those, you know, like trigger phrases where you're like, oh fuck, he's bit, he's crazy, he's not a good person. I thought he was a normal person. He's insane. How long have you been hiding it from the group? You're infected. And that's, you want to know, this is my theory about, you know, this might be the only time that I get to say I use my sociology degree, but I have a theory about why Austin is, you know, particularly good right now. Because when I was down there, I noticed it's warm enough and nice enough that if you're like a legit insane person, you can like manage there. Like, you can live in a shitty apartment or live in your car and be like a borderline homeless insane person and go do mics. But you stand out because you're like legit insane. And so you don't get, they have a really good filtration system for who makes it to the showcase level.
Yeah.
And when I was there and did showcases, everybody on the showcases was like competent to good comics. Yeah. And in Chicago and Columbus too, and other, like, you know, Denver's probably where it's like, it's a harsh, cold, expensive environment. And so insane, if you're crazy in Chicago, you kind of have to still be able to fill out a apartment lease and like hold down a job. Yeah. So the crazy people are like in a suit and they can send an email and they like slide by. So sometimes you're on like a show with somebody, and if they lived in Austin, if they had grown up in Arizona or whatever, like they'd have like, you know, mad scientist hair and you know, rat skull necklace. They'd stand out as crazy. But yeah, in the Midwest, they're like, they had to channel that into some sort of serpent-like reptile thing. I don't know if that makes sense, but like the crazy just blends in between all the layers a little bit.
It does make sense, and it makes sense because I, too, have a sociology degree.
There we go. Two educated men having a conversation of science.
And so, like, I started off doing journalism, but when I transferred from Youngstown State to Ohio State, they didn't really describe to me like how to get into the program. It was very generic, and so I was like, I was literally like a senior with like no major, because if I would have stayed with communications, I would have ran out financial aid. I was already in like year 7 of like undergrad, like, you know? So I was like, nah. So my minor is in criminal justice, and I already has some of those classes like coincide or whatever, so I was like, well, I only need 7 more classes if I do sociology, so let's do that.
That's how most sociologists end up.
Yeah,
sociology.
I was just so pissed. But then, now that I look at my life, that was like one of the greatest setups ever, because I mean, I wanted to do comedy, but I wasn't like, you know, like telling people like this is my dream. I just kept it in my back pocket. But now that I do comedy, that sociology degree helps so much. Like, it helps a lot.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You have to learn to bullshit.
Yeah. And you learn bullshitters, man. That's why I just be sitting in the corner. I'll be looking at people. I was like, nah, I'm fucking with you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Dude, I did my my thesis for my final in sociology was on whether or not sociology should be allowed to call itself a science or if it's a philosophy. And so I, as part of it, I like interviewed everybody in sociology to see, and like maybe one out of 9 or 10 people that I interviewed, like had intentions to pursue sociology. Like everybody else was like, I want to open a bar. I want to be a, go into psychology, whatever it was. But like, it's such a motley crew of people who like very rarely go on to be like a professional sociologist. It's usually like some sort of path to another thing is very transient or whatever. So it's an interesting medley of people that you interact with.
Yeah. I love it though. It's just, I like telling people because they'd be like, I'll be like, what you get your degree? I'd be like, sociology. They'd be like, oh, okay. And I know they don't know what it means.
So yes.
I'd
just, like,
just be like, it's the study of people and their behaviors. And they'd be like, oh.
They're like, I almost understand less now. I don't know.
But no, I really like feel like that has helped me a lot. And like, especially like with my crowd work, people be like, I don't feel like I'm good at it. I feel like I'm still learning. People be like, you're good at it. And I'd be like, bro, I just got a degree. Like, I got a degree and I got a black mom. Like, that's how I'm good at crowd
work. That's an ultimate combination. That's a winning combination.
Yeah, man. That's what's up. That's what's up, man. What's who's on your Mount Rushmore for comedy?
Mount Rushmore for comedy. Let's say Louis C.K. I'm going to go number one. That's definitely the guy I saw where I was like, I think I saw his Conan where he had the joke about Wi-Fi on a plane, and that was like the first. I had a similar thing with music where like you the first person does something, we're like, oh fuck, like now I'm interested in this as an art form. It used to just be something that was like on the radio or on TV. Then it's like somebody does like something where you're like, oh shit, this is like I'm looking at it through a different lens now. Norm Macdonald, probably. Patrice O'Neill. I'll say Shane Gillis right now.
Okay.
I think he's like carrying the torch of like, you know, good stuff. You know, I've always liked something that's got like a little bit more to it than just whether or not it's clever, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like I can watch somebody who's like a clever writer doing like, you know, kind of one-liner stuff, but after like 15 minutes or something like that, it'll kind of like you've hacked the rhythm and you start to like predict, even if you don't know what the joke's going to be, you like know when the punchline's coming, and it just is, doesn't hold my short attention span the same way. But like Burr is another, you know, like all those like classic seller comics or whatever from like the late 90s, early 2000s and stuff. Like the Tough Crowd. I know that's like a kind of a cliche answer for a lot of comics, but like, that would be my like go-to, my wellspring of inspiration.
Okay.
How about you? Yep.
Let's see today. Martin Lawrence, Martin, all-time just because, I think my mom, I asked her and she said, yeah, his show Martin, my mom, I asked her at one point, I was like, how much did you watch this show? Mm-hmm. Because I've been studying a lot of sitcoms lately, and when I went back and watched it, I was like, I just want to see if I watched every episode, and I've only missed one. Well, and I was alive, but I was a young kid, like, so majority of me like remembering it was like reruns, but I had already knew the line. So I'm like, mom, like, dang, how much did you? So Martin's like ingrained in me. So I love Martin Lawrence. And then I would say David Arnold. He was probably like the first big time comedian that I've ever had like a conversation with. It was, although small, it still happened.
Yeah.
Arnaz J. I love Arnaz J. He's very animated. He's very talented. He's very funny. Dion Cole. I love Dion Cole just because he stands out.
I remember his Netflix. Well, he was on the stand-ups.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the first season of that. I remember liking that.
And I still watch that sometimes when I go to my, like when I'm about to go out of town for Charlotte. Let me watch this while I get ready. Like he's the only one I do that with. And to be honest, I think at the time I wasn't doing comedy, but I was dating somebody and she just kept telling me like, you need to do comedy. You need to do comedy. You need to do comedy. And I was like, all right. So then I just started writing jokes, not even like, oh, I'm going to write a joke today. I'm just going to write down whatever comes to my head. And when it's probably like my second time coming to Chicago, and I was like, I want to go to a comedy show. And I went to Laugh Factory, and it was seeing Deon Coe's like only $25, but he was working on his first Netflix special. And it was only like 20 people in the room. He was in there practicing. He just walked out and said, I'm just coming out here to practice for my special. So I felt like I was getting like a master class on how to be a comedian. And
that's pretty
cool.
Him,
to see him like have his jokes on his phone and him just reading off, I was like, all right, that's how you do it. Because I didn't know, like, I didn't have an example of how to do this or whatever. So now, like, when I'm working on a new joke, I feel like every comic do it now, but I just take my phone up there and I just read it off. You know what I'm saying?
See what it is.
Yeah. I feel like I got a master class. Like Deon Cole I really like Deon Cole.
I had a kind of similar experience. It wasn't working on new stuff, but it was like a year or two after I moved here. Another one of my all-time favorites is Robert Kelly. And he was coming through Laugh Factory. And I had just been doing nothing but open. I mean, like, I don't even think I had been on a show since I had moved here or whatever. And comics were like, we're going to go see Robert Kelly. Do you want to come? And I went and we got sat like right in the front row. And it was like, I remember watching it and like the sound of laughter echoing in the Laugh Factory was like unlike anything that had happened since I had moved to Chicago. It was like, you know, and the quality of like a guy who's been doing it 30 years versus like the 3 and 4 year open micers that I saw on a day. I was like, it was almost a different art form. And it was like, I remember walking out kind of with the same masterclass vibe where I was like, oh, thank God. It's not just bad open mics forever. Like it gets really good after, if you do it long enough, it gets really good.
Yeah. No, I love Deon Cole. Like, yeah. And I'm happy like the trajectory of his career. Cause I remember him at Comic View, like him, Arnaz J and Kevin Hart, those three and the comedian also Talent. Like they all like just stood out to me just cause they were just like different from their average comedian. And I was like, I just always remembered them. And and to see like Deon where he was then and where he is now, I was like, I could see the trend, especially even like with, I mean, we didn't know Kevin, but like even with Kevin, like see where he started at Comic View to like, I guess like the man he is now, like how do you think and talk or whatever. It's like, like you really like worked on yourself. And that's probably why you're in the position you're in now. So yeah, I really fuck with that. What is like some good advice that you can give to any comedian that's listening to this as we start to wrap this up?
Ooh. I mean, like number one advice is just to do it as like, especially the first couple years, like just every opportunity that you get, take it. Like, you know, like hit as many open mics as you have the energy to hit, write when you have the energy to write. I know like everyone figures out their rhythm. It took me a long time, but like the first couple years that I did it, I did so many open mics so often that it really paid off on the back end, even though it didn't feel like it at the time. So I would say repetition is key. Get the hours in, do it in like places that you're uncomfortable doing it, you know, take whatever, all the opportunities that you can when you're new. It's not going to be, you're never going to regret doing it instead of not doing it when you're new. It's going to be worth it. So do that. What's some other good advice? I mean, it's really the number one thing I think is just to keep doing it. I don't think there's very much else. Whatever, closed-toed shoes, long pants, no hat. I don't have anything else.
Eric, tell people why they should listen to Comedians in Bed.
They should listen to Comedians in Bed because you're talking to comedians in bed. Like, I mean, it's the same pitch you gave me. You should listen to Comedians in Bed because you're talking to comics without an agenda. There's no agenda. There's not a pressure to be funny. There's not a pressure to be serious. You got to have, if you're interested in like just what's floating through the mind of an average comedian on an average day, this is like this is where the discourse is happening. This is the cafes of Renaissance Paris. This is where people, philosophers are. The discourse. Great minds of the generation are engaged in discourse. So if you like comedy, watch this and watch podcasts like it, because you'll get you'll just see what's going on behind the curtain.
Eric, tell people where they can find you at.
You got my wrong hand. Where are we at? Oop, we get my Instagram thing there. Eventually, that will change. That's my high school nickname, and it needs to go away because it doesn't relate to comedy at all. But look that up. All my dates go up there. I have a website, emersonericcomedy.com, but that's always lagging behind. So Instagram's the best place to start. And then check out the podcast. We're a couple, we've been doing it for a while now. We got a couple episodes in the bank. It's been on a bit of a hiatus coming up to the holidays, and we're about to start putting stuff out again. We got a bunch saved up. So check that out. And if you like it, send us a question, because we can always use more material.
Hey man, if you like this week's episode, man, be sure to check out our live stream every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, on my YouTube channel at TYE Comedy. Once again, that's TYE Comedy. But if you want to see weekly clips of past episodes or current episodes, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Comedians in Bed Podcast. Man, we want to thank once again for Eric for stopping by today. We greatly appreciate it. And I'm going to say something that I never really say, like and subscribe. Like, I don't know why I don't ever say that. It's very important, but like and subscribe, not only to hear, but also to Eric's podcast, Turn Up in Stone, as well. Tell them that we sent you from Comedians in Bed. Eric, man, we thank you once again for joining us here today. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for having me, man.